This is Trib Live, part of the Texas Tribune event series. Trib Live is made possible by NRG, AT&T, and IBC Bank.
I'm pleased to introduce our distinguished guest today. Last Tuesday, Democratic voters across Texas chose Bill White, who served three terms as mayor of Houston, as their 2010 nominee for governor. Mr. White defeated six other primary opponents with 76% of the vote, winning 253 of the state's 254 counties. Mr. Mayor, I still can't imagine what you did to Montague County, but maybe we'll get to the bottom of it this morning. A native of San Antonio, the son of school teachers, Mr. White attended Harvard University on an American Legion scholarship and then returned here to Austin for law school at the University of Texas, where he graduated with highest honors. After practicing law at a Houston firm, Mr. White served as Deputy Secretary of Energy in the Clinton administration and later as chairman of the Texas Democratic Party. He was also president and CEO of an energy and real estate company. In 2003, Mr. White was first elected to lead Texas's largest and the nation's fourth largest city, and was twice reelected with more than 85% of the vote. In 2009, he ran or was running for the United States Senate seat now occupied by Kay Bailey Hutchison, all the while professing no interest whatsoever in running for governor, despite the pressing and hectoring and pestering of certain obnoxious journalists. But in late November, he announced he was contemplating a move to the governor's race, and in early December, he made the switch. He'll face incumbent Rick Perry, the Republican nominee for governor, this November in what people are saying will be the most competitive general election since Ann Richards squared off against George W. Bush in 1994. Please join me in welcoming the Honorable Bill White.
Thanks, Kevin. What a great introduction.
Thank you very much. Please. Far seat. Mr. Mayor, good morning, and thank you very much so close to the primary for being here with us.
It's great to be with
you. We appreciate it. Why do you want to be governor?
Texas needs a governor who will lead our state in the future. You know, we need a state where our workers are trained to have the skills, the technology to compete for good jobs. That's the fundamental challenge we have in our state's future. Our current governor has failed in that respect, and we need a new governor.
Presumably, the things that you find wanting about Governor Perry and the needs that you identified about the state were in evidence before December 4th when you decided to run for governor. So if the problems that you identified were there, why were you running for the Senate all year long last year?
Well, I didn't run for governor when I was about, 40 either, or 35. And a lot of people in this room know what the problems are, didn't run. The reason that I ran for senator and filed for senator is I thought there would be an alternative to Governor Perry in Senator Hutchison. And I thought then, and I think now, that it's important, Evan, that Texas have a voice at the table in D.C. that represents the mainstream of our state.
Right. But it was a calculation on your part in late November, early December, that Senator Hutchison was not going to get the nomination that caused you to switch over?
No, it was her changing her mind about whether she would resign her seat. I thought that if she resigned her seat and campaigned full time, that we would have another alternative for governor. I think she thought that, and many of her donors thought it, when she said that she was not going to resign from a Senate seat that also had had consequences on the Senate seat. But as she had said, and she said on a TV commercial, it put her at a disadvantage.
And you are not in a position now of saying that you prefer to run against, all things considered, you prefer to run against Governor Perry than Senator Hutchison.
I think that issue's pretty moot, but,
Yes, it is pretty moot. I agree. What exactly is it about the governor that you find insufficient? Talk about
real leadership is not dividing people into teams, red team, blue team, this team, that team, and playing people off against each other. That's not leadership. Leadership is finding common ground. Look, most Texans want good jobs, jobs with a future, jobs with security. They want their kids to be better educated than they are. They want to live in safe neighborhoods. They want this to occur at a reasonable cost, not too much of the taxpayers' dollars. They want their tax dollars to be used effectively and wisely by people who know how to manage. The vast majority of Texans want those things. So ask yourself this question. Why do we have politicians now, and why does Governor Perry in particular have campaigns where he divides Texans into groups and then plays them off against each other? mean, what we did within the city of Houston, we brought people together to get things done. We ran the government on a bipartisan basis. That's not happening in Austin. Right. And if we want to move forward to improve our economy for the future, if we want to prepare the Texas economy for the future, then we need a governor who has that leadership capability. We don't right now.
Divisiveness, though, Mr. Mayor, is a technique. I want to ask you about substance. What substantively do you find lacking in Governor Perry that would be different in a white administration?
Divisiveness is more, you and I disagree, or maybe that's just as an interlocutor. Divisiveness is not simply a technique.
But substantively, what results does divisiveness provide?
It means that we don't have consensus and we are unable to focus on some of the principal issues of our state, bringing the kids to school. We need a governor who spends more time in the community, mobilizing the people of this state to keep our kids in school than he does to try to keep himself in office.
So less politics,
okay?
More policy.
If we had a governor who was preoccupied and spent a lot of time trying to keep our kids in school, and that means mobilizing the resources of the community, the principals, the teachers, the parents' organizations, civic and community leadership, to keep those kids in school, if we had a governor who spent as much time doing that as getting reelected, our state would be much better off, and that's the kind of governor I will be.
Tell me a few things. Let's assume that you're now governor of this state. Tell me a few things that you would be doing right now from a policy standpoint that would be markedly different from the current administration.
Well, I mean, it can't just be one thing, but the first would be on the topic that we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
Is where this governor spends so much time railing about things that are outside of his control in Washington, I would be in the communities, it's not just passing laws,
right,
looking at the best practices in early childhood education, helping school boards and school and teachers and educators, parents set goals for the school system about what the graduation rate should be,
right,
providing the tools and programs through the legislature to allow kids who must work to stay in school to get credits and not drop out or have a GED, later go back and get a GED, and then have to make up the real learning in a community college. These are things we could do, and I could give you a list of others. We would be organizing instead of doing it as a mayor. Imagine this state. If we had periodic reach out to dropout walks like we do in Houston, where we mobilize a community, people like that are in this room right now, and we went out to the houses of the people who were dropping out of schools, if we treated somebody who dropped out of school as an emergency, as we would as if somebody broke their leg. You know, last Thursday, Governor Perry said on a radio show in Dallas that we have a 10% dropout rate in our state. Now, bear with me on this. Year after year, we have about 360,000 ninth graders, 240,000 or less graduating seniors. Now, I remember ninth or 10th grade math. We have a lot of missing kids in this state if Governor Perry is right and the dropout rate is only 10%. You cannot deal with the problem by misleading people about the problem and pretending it doesn't exist.
Okay, so the dropout issue is one in which you put distance between yourself and Governor Perry. Talk about another issue or two or three, as many as you want, in which a white administration would be substantively different from a Perry administration.
We need a long-term plan to promote excellence in higher education and remove barriers to higher education. There ought to be a plan for fully funding the Texas grant program. There needs to be plans for increasing the amount of state support for higher education and combine that with some plan to make college tuition more affordable. Evan, I can't tell you how many times I've been on a campaign trail now for about 14 months where I have had parents who have approached me and they, with a story like somebody had in Center, Texas, in the courthouse a year ago. This fellow had built a janitorial services company. His daughter had worked hard.
Yep.
She was able to get, her dream was to go to the University of Texas at Austin. She was in the top 10% of the class. He calculated how much it would be. Because he was in that middle class area, he was $5,000 short with financial assistance and all of his life savings of where he needed to be. And he told me, now I have to explain to my daughter next week that she can't afford to go to the school of her dreams. promised me that if you get elected, you could do something about that. And that's when I was running for Senate. This story I have heard so many times. It's not contrived. It's not a soundbite of people who are priced out of higher education in our state. And that means that there needs to be real examination of all the cost within the higher education system. Don't tell me that there are not some people who have retired on the job. I mean, I know that's the case. And we can't afford that. We cannot afford that in our higher. There needs to be some plan for making it for where if one of our students can get in one of the schools of their dream, they ought to be able to go to that school with some plan of how they can afford it. Look, we can't afford to be exporting some of our brightest schools to the University of Georgia, University of Mississippi, Oklahoma, LSU. The number of our kids in this state that are good, high-performing kids who are having to go out of state, even though they would prefer to go in state, is extraordinary. And it's 2 or 3 to 1, a ratio. And a lot of those kids are going to stay outside the state. We need a plan to deal with that. We ought to be importing people who are better educated. And let me say something else on that. Something's wrong with an administration that tolerates year after year a situation where we have to import skilled labor, such as nurses or welders, because we refuse to educate them here in Texas. We need import from other countries on visas, because we do not have a plan to educate Texans who are willing to work to fill those skilled jobs. There's something wrong with that.
Mr. Mayor, do you support the re-regulation of tuition?
Well, I'd like to keep the politicians out of it, what I would like to do is have some plan which combines some limits on tuition with a commitment for a certain level of state funding and a commitment of university administrations to cost containment measures. I think there got to be a plan that addresses all those three things.
Now, we're looking at maybe as of yesterday from the comptroller's office an $11 billion shortfall. Some people in this room may suspect it's actually larger than that.
Right.
So in the face of an inability on the state's part to fund its current obligations, how do you look at potentially re-regulating tuition and then having to commit to a greater state share contributing to higher education? Where's money going to come from?
Well, I mean, that's something that, we will set priorities. Education should be the highest priority in the budget. And then I and members of boards and commissions and the legislature and people who are outstanding people in the private sector will be looking under the hood of the state finances to see where we can find some efficiencies. I'll tell you, it won't be done by things that are just across the board, Soviet style. Budget management that people who've only been career politicians tend to embrace.
You don't agree with the 5% mandate across the board to cut state agencies?
That's right.
You do not agree.
I don't agree that is it just a coincidence that 5% is the appropriate amount for each state agency, and that you've really examined from the bottoms up where the productivity improvements are? No, I mean, it's because that's the way that career politicians know how to run government. Let me tell you how we've done it in Houston. We anticipated that there would be a shortfall in the sales tax revenue. And then we drove productivity improvements, so that we could cut costs without compromising services. You say, well, what are those? Here's where you look for productivity improvements. One, renegotiating vendor contracts. It's done all the time in the private sector where the customer's in bad shape, we do it in the oil and gas business all the time. If the customers are in bad shape, you renegotiate the contract with the vendors so that the contractors share that pain. Number two, you find productivity improvements whenever you look at a work unit of 40 or 50 people and there's two people planning to retire the next year. You identify what those people are, their job descriptions, and you make sure, or you try and you strive, that the other workers will take up the slack. Sometimes that will require technology and some retraining, so that you will be able to have the same amount of output from that work unit with fewer workers. That's done throughout America. It's done throughout the private sector. We did it in the city of Houston, and that's what needs to be done within the state of Texas. Now, I can't tell you that in the first legislative session, Evan, that everything that Texas should have been doing and planning for the long run, right, will be cured just because some new governor comes into office. But I can tell you this, we need to start our state in the right direction.
But Mr. Mayor, if you're against the 5% across the board mandate by the governor, lieutenant governor, right. and speaker, if you were Governor White today and you were facing an $11 billion or more shortfall in the absence of a 5% cut, what would you be recommending?
Well, I would have, first of all, I would not waited until, you know, whenever it was January. And for those of your Facebook aficionados, I mean, in early December, I stated, and this was just 2 weeks after the controller made a report on revenue projections, I posted why that would be off and why they would decide in pretty short order that there would be a sales tax shortfall. And I said at the time, they ought to have plans right then and there, and here's how to handle it. I would ask each people in each department and agency of the state and their boards to come with a plan that would have both a list of their priorities and where they could get productivity improvements of the two types that I just listed. For example, in the biennial budget they have of the state, an increase in the FTEs and in the employees of the state. What is your level of attrition? What are those people that you anticipate leaving? What are their job descriptions? What have you done to redesign the work processes so that the remaining employees can take up the slack? And it's also part of leadership in telling those employees why they must take up that slack and that you expect them to do so. It's done in businesses. You can do this. What we did in the city of Houston, we looked at our largest contracts, vendor by vendor. Our largest one was a solid waste contract with garbage disposal. We called the vendor in. They were long, tough negotiations, but we understood that if the customer's revenue is going down, so will the vendor's revenues must go down if they wanted to continue to do business with, in this case, the city after the contract expired. That's the kind of thing you do. You don't do it with some memo across the board. Not everything is of equal priority.
Mr. Mayor, you've alluded to your time as mayor now a few different ways. Yeah. Is there one thing or are there two things that we can take from your performance as mayor that would tell us best what kind of a governor you would be?
Yeah.
Things that you would put forward?
Well, there was almost 15,000 votes on city council. It's a strong mayor form of government. City council at time to time, there's some Houstonians here, it was very contentious. Before I arrived, there were groups that were blocks, principally sort of partisan ideological blocks. And as I say, like 14,700 or 800 votes, none of them broke down by party lines. Okay? Now, you want to contrast that with what's happening in Austin today? You say, oh, well, you know, that's nonpartisan. And I'll say, wait a minute. I mean, we have people of strong political views across the political spectrum. It's making sure that you define the common objectives and then involve people in the decision-making process so it's not top-down. If you do that, you will be able to move our state forward. Because I'll tell you this, people understand that this is a great state, but they also understand that there's dark clouds on the horizon unless we train and educate people better in our state to compete in the world economy. That's the principal challenge facing our state right now. And if people think that our best days are behind us, maybe they should take a look at Governor Perry. But if you want our best days to be in front of us, you need a governor who can bring people together to focus on that issue and do something about it.
What convinces you that that approach is scalable up to the legislature? Why do you think that the way that you ran the council and you dealt with your fellow council members would necessarily apply to how you would be able to deal with, of course, this is not a strong governor form of government.
Right.
It's a weak governor form of government.
Well, I'm not saying it'll work from day one, but leadership is setting an example, inspiring people, motivating people, helping them visualize, understanding, mobilizing the community, and mobilizing the people of Texas to applaud those who get things done in either political party and to condemn those who are showboating. And that I know how to do. And that is something that tends to work. And leaders who move, who have a broad base and move people forward, and it could be in a very small town, you know, Houston's bigger than 16 states, but it could be in a very small town or it could be, you know, Churchill's War Cabinet, whatever it may be. If you bring out the best in people, make sure it's not a matter of egos and define common objectives, you can move forward. That's what leadership is.
Anything else from your time as mayor you want to point to and say, if you like my doing this, this is what would happen as governor.
Yeah, I mean, we know how to squeeze value out of taxpayer dollars. We were able to contain the growth in the city revenues and the spending that we had. We were the only city or county that I know of in the state that adopted a charter amendment that imposed an annual limit on the amount by which property taxes could rise, the revenues. I'm talking not just the rate, but the revenues could rise without a vote of the people. And the reason is that because of increasing appraisals in good times, there's many middle-class families where the amount they would pay in property taxes increases far more every year than does their income. And there's people on fixed income, there's people struggling to get by in neighborhoods who should not be faced with abandoning in their house and remaining in their house because of this phenomena. So we were disciplined in our budget. And once I had to go seek voter authorization, there's nothing wrong with seeking voter authorization of something that you clearly define to them that is a necessity in government or that's necessary to improve the lives of people. We had fiscal discipline. And at the same part of that, we squeezed efficiencies out of the system. That's why we undertook far-reaching pension reforms before the pension system was even in crisis. That's how we contained the growth of health benefits by increasing some employee share so that we had would have incentives more aligned with the employees. Right. That's why we had annual performance evaluations of our employees and asked people to identify the top 20% of performers, the bottom 10% of performers. And we saw the pace of activity of our great city employees pick up. That's real leadership. You can provide more value. We can squeeze the most out of taxpayer dollars, and it takes somebody with extensive executive experience who understands the difference between making a speech and getting a result.
On this tax question, I'm moved to ask you whether you have taken or will take in your campaign the notion of raising taxes as a way out of the budget shortfall situation in Texas off the table. Will you commit to this audience that as governor you would not raise taxes?
No, I mean, I won't. What I did when running for mayor of Houston is I never committed to whether I would raise or lower taxes. I would say the same thing, that I got to look under the hood and see how the economy is at the time and make sure that we are able to make the revenues equal the expenses, and that I would do everything possible in order to maintain fiscal discipline on the revenue side, period. Now, somebody told me, I don't know whether it's the case, there was some journalist who said, you know, you may be the only person who I've covered in these years who's run for public office who never committed to cut tax rates before they were elected, but cut tax rates 5 straight years. And I did not commit to do it because look under the hood and see what you can do and what the state of the economy is and what the trade-off is, you shouldn't be making that decision. That decision shouldn't be made on the basis of a soundbite or a political ploy. It should be made on what you need in order to accomplish your goals. And trying to create an affordable business climate here is one of the goals.
And so by leaving open the door to raising taxes, by refusing to pledge not to raise taxes, you understand right. That you may be handing your Republican opponent in the fall an opportunity for them to caricature you as a standard Democrat. He won't commit not to raising taxes. Wait until he gets into office. He's going to start talking about tax increases. You're prepared to do that?
They'll mislead people anyway, so.
Well, let's stay on the emerging critique or caricature of you that is now already out in the world. You, I know, are aware of the Dave Carney memo. I know you were asked about it this weekend on WFAA.
Where does he live, by the way?
He lives not in Texas, but he does work for a guy who's running against you.
Where is he? In New England?
Mr. Carney?
Yeah, somebody told me he was from New England. Is that where?
Well, let us nonetheless talk about the memo that Governor Perry's consultant released talking about how they intend or would like to run against you in the fall. I want to give you an opportunity to rebut those things before this audience. So they call you a trial lawyer. True?
I mean, I've tried lawsuits, but I never did a plaintiff's personal injury trial. I represent businesses. That's who I represented.
Right. Do you think that being labeled a trial lawyer in this state in 2010 is a negative?
Well, if it was true, absolutely. If it's false, then maybe people would see there's enough falsehoods and that they should not trust people with no credibility.
Is the message here...
Including journalists who repeat these things.
If I were repeating something that were not true, that might be one issue, actually.
That's my point.
So
that's my point,
so
exactly.
Is repeating the fact that you're a trial lawyer necessarily false?
Well, as I say, I represented businesses. I did litigation. The word trial lawyer, if you mean plaintiff's personal injury trial lawyer, I didn't do that. If you mean that I tried cases for businesses, I did that.
Well, I should ask you then where you came down on the question of tort reform, which was before the people of Texas.
I think there needs a balance. I mean, you know, I was never involved in the issue in particular, but there was certainly a pendulum. Look, this is what we want in our civil justice system. We want a civil justice system in which the results are predictable and more predictable, in which it doesn't matter which judge you appear before, within some reason to determine the outcome, in which the costs are reasonable, in which people are able to get redress for their, have remedies under law as defined. You want something where it's not the identity of the party or whether they're plaintiff or defendant that determines their likelihood of success in a trial court or appeal. That's what we want. We want something fair, impartial, and affordable in our civil justice system.
Did you vote for the tort reform referendum at the ballot when it was on the ballot a couple years ago?
When you said the tort reform referendum.
Would you support
referendum?
The proposition that eventually passed in Texas?
I think that it's a good thing that we have some limits. I think the reforms that we had, I can't remember what all was on the ballot, but I did think that things that we can do in order to bring medical malpractice premiums down, that's a step in the right direction. Now, I know that there may be abuses on that in some cases, but in general, it's a good thing that you have medical malpractice premiums coming down.
They call you anti-gun. Would you clarify your position on guns and gun control, Second Amendment?
I'm not anti-gun. I support the Second Amendment. I own guns. I think that's, and I don't want to take away people's guns. So that is not true. I am concerned when you have gangs out there stealing people's guns and selling them to felons. I think we ought to crack down on that, but I don't think we need new laws to do that.
Another thing that was mentioned, and I think it ties into something that happened in the Republican primary for governor as well, is they referenced your service to President Clinton.
Right.
I wonder if you consider the invoking of President Clinton's name to be a burden for you as you run for governor in Texas, and is that something that you will talk about out on the campaign trail?
I don't know. Honestly, I haven't focused on that so much. I mean, it's a fact that I serve. Here's the fact, so maybe some gurus in this audience can give us some advice. That I've served as Deputy Secretary of Energy of the United States of America. During that time, we greatly expanded the U.S. commitment to renewables and energy efficiency, did some of the investments which helped lead to our modern wind industry in Texas. Actually, it was 16, 17 years ago where we funded the first wind project in Texas. And I said at the time, an account that was well reported both in the trade press, New York Times, that this would be augur for a robust, big, new employer in Texas, the wind business, and it has. And we expanded the ability of firms to explore offshore in the Gulf of Mexico into deep water with deep water royalty incentives, and that it created the largest new source of domestic petroleum in the United States in the last 15 years. And I did this while cutting the cost within the department by over $1 billion. Mm-hmm. So I'm proud of that record.
And you'll talk about that certainly.
Yeah, I will.
What about the current president of the United States? You will no doubt be featured in ads as sort of an Obama Democrat. They're going to try to run at you and said tie you to Washington just as they tried and in some way succeeded to tie Senator Hutchison to Washington.
Right.
Do you run from the president in this campaign? Do you run from the National Democratic Party?
I'm running for the people of Texas. I mean, I don't think, Evan, this election should be about, one party or who said what to whom in Washington. It ought to be about moving this state forward. Mm-hmm. It ought to be about who can squeeze the most out of our taxpayer dollars and how we prepare Texans for a stronger long-term economy in our state. Mm-hmm. If people want a better future for this state and somebody who can bring people together in this state to move us forward, then I should do okay. If people think our best days are behind us and they tolerate a situation in which somebody is running for re-election constantly, even after, you know, when they should be governing, then my chances are not as good.
Do you support the president?
What do you mean?
Do you support the president as a Democrat running for governor? Do you support the Democratic president of the United States as?
Yeah, I hope every president, including those not of my party, succeeds. I keep our presidents and our family prayers, regardless of which party they are. On some things I agree with President Obama, on some things I disagree. On some things I agreed with President Bush, on some things I disagree.
I'm not a blind follower of somebody. Tell me something you disagree with President Obama on.
The debt, the extent of deficit spending, the whole fiscal management of the country.
You think we're spending too much money?
You bet.
And what would you recommend to him if he called you and said, Mayor White, tell me what I might do to solve this problem? What would you tell him?
I'd say, take a look at what we did in the first 2 or 3 years of the Clinton administration. I mean, I was in those meetings with Lloyd Benson and many other senior people. It's very simple. You can't have your expenditures rise faster than your revenues if you're going to be able to reduce the debt.
Is there specific stuff that you think that we're spending too much money on?
Yes.
Can you tell us what that is?
Almost everything.
Across the board, huh? Okay.
I'm not saying in equal proportion, but I mean, it's just a matter of math when you look at the budget. Look, this is the same issue as the education issue, which is we as a state and a country, we shouldn't eat our seed corn. We shouldn't pull up the ladder behind us. We need to create a better future. That's what Texas is. This is a great state. This is a state where people have come recently, and they came, like many of my ancestors, generations ago, just looking for a better life, hoping that the next generation would have more opportunities. Now, if we want that to be Texas, if we want that to be the Texas of the future, then we and our country needs to invest in the skills of its people who need to compete in a global economy. And we need to make sure that our kids and grandkids are not burdened with excessive debt, period. The two issues are identical, building for the future in this country. And now, I'll say, we are blessed in Texas to have a constitution in our state which has prohibited debt, except if it's, unless of course you can amend the constitution in order to allow that debt to be incurred. If you want a contrast between the approach of Governor Perry and me, it would be real plain. His head of Texas Department of Transportation, who you'll have as your guest, said in written testimony on February the 2nd that she intended to borrow $2.9 billion to build highways with no source of repayment identified except for funds that were needed and essential for the maintenance and operation of that system. And that the reason that they were borrowing money was that their revenues were going down and projected to be going down consistently over time. I'll tell you what, that's not conservative. Whatever you call it, is like a family who sees their income going down, they say, we've got to maintain a standard of living, therefore why don't we go to the bank and borrow more money? That's exactly what it's like. And as governor of Texas, when we borrowed money, we would want to do and have a source of repayment that was not simply mortgaging the future and deciding that we were going to go off a precipice. And the word precipice is exactly how she described the situation at TxDOT. That's not leadership.
Transportation is one of the areas that you will take to the fight against Governor Perry.
Yes.
And you'll couch it in terms of not just debt, but transportation.
Mobility.
Mobility.
Yeah, you know, look, Texans are more concerned about how they get from where they work to where they live than whether an 18-wheeler gets from the border to Chicago.
Right.
And Governor Perry's been preoccupied with this Trans-Texas Corridor scheme of how to take 18-wheelers across the state, rather than focusing on how we get people from, you know, San Pedro, 281 into San Antonio, where there's a perennial traffic jam, or how we deal with that. You know, there's other places in the state that I could identify for you where we don't have the money for new starts. We need a long-term plan.
Okay, two more quick questions before we open it up to the audience. The first is sort of back on this federal question, but really back in Texas, where we have more uninsured people than any other state in the country.
Right.
Do you support the health care reform stuff that's under discussion at the federal level? And what, as governor, would be your approach to dealing with the vast numbers of uninsured in this state?
Well, health care reform stuff at the federal level, that encompasses awful lot. I mean, the Republicans have a plan. Looks like to me 20 or 30 different Democrats have plans. Right. What I think we ought to do in Texas is we ought to have a competitive insurance market. We ought to have more products like the three-share plan that we pioneered in Harris County in Houston, Texas, where it's an affordable insurance product. It doesn't cover every catastrophic loss, but it provides for almost all, if not all, of the primary health care needs and minor surgeries, where the premiums that run for the employee only, $60, $70 for the employee, $60, $70 for the employer. We don't have that kind of product now. We need to open up competition in this insurance market and have more health benefit products like this that are on the menu. Look, I'm not going to control what happens in Washington, or as governor or as candidate, give running commentary on everything that I can't control. There are people who can do that. Maybe they should work for the Tribune or, you know.
Not hiring, unfortunately, right now.
Well.
But as governor, would you be talking about invoking the 10th Amendment to rebut whatever's passed in Washington, regardless of the outcome there?
The 10th Amendment exists whether or not somebody so-called invokes it.
Well, do you think, okay, do you,
well. I'm not invoking the First Amendment.
I mean invoke it rhetorically. In other words, the governor has talked about the possibility of using the 10th Amendment to rebut, quote, Obamacare. Would you be talking in any way like that?
I will try to avoid hot air politics.
Okay.
I mean, you know, look, if somebody violates the Constitution, then, you know, we'll sue them, period.
All right.
But we don't need to. There's a difference between the success in a lawsuit. And by the way, I don't like frivolous lawsuits. Have I said that yet? And some people, including people I could name, Dick, and I mean, people want access to a justice system that's fair.
Right.
They need access to a justice system that is fair. But you know, I'm not going to file a suit just in order to get a headline.
Okay. Last question before we open it up. You alluded to middle school or high school math earlier in this conversation.
Yep.
Let me end with math, specifically the math of the map. We could assume that Democrats are going to be with you and Republicans are going to be with the governor. You're going to need to get the people in the middle, given the way that the state breaks down, to be with you to win this election in what is still a Republican state by all evidence. Do you have to persuade the Hutchison voters who came out on the losing end of the primary to support you? Are there enough unaffiliated folks out there that you can make the math work to win this race? Talk about your strategy for a second.
I mean, yes and yes. You know, we've had lots of people who've joined the campaign since Tuesday, and they were supporters of Kay Bailey Hutchison. We have lots of bipartisan support. And the other part of your question is, are the 30% of Texans who identify themselves as being independent a real force to contend with? You bet they are.
Right.
And if you look at what we've done in Houston, that's been the heart of my appeal to those exact independent voters.
Okay.
And for reasons that I think exist throughout the state, you know, when we didn't know what the consequences were when I commissioned scientists to analyze the air in Houston, tell us whether there were excessive amounts of any chemicals that posed definite risk to human health. They did identify people, researchers from Rice, Baylor, UT Health Sciences, UT Galveston, University of Texas at Austin, St. Luke's. They identified some substances, benzene and butadiene, were at the top of the list that we had in excessive concentrations. And we threatened those companies with suits that would close them down unless they brought those levels down in a way that we knew was scientifically and technologically and economically doable. They fought us every step of the way. Now the levels of butadiene are down by 80% at the areas that were the highest concentration, benzene over 50%. And you know what we got? Somebody had done a survey before one of my reelection campaigns of this, just to see whether I needed to campaign or not for reelection. And among people who identified themselves as independent, one thing that they noted was what I did with those polluters that were some of the, you know, most powerful interests. And it wasn't because they were bad companies. They were good companies. I know these companies. Anybody who doesn't think refining is an important industry, I assume you walk everywhere. Otherwise, you're a hypocrite. So it's an important industry. I think that independent Texans are ready for somebody who can move this state forward.
All right, Mayor White, we'll stop right there before we open it up for questions. I want to thank you very much for your time this morning. Let's give Mayor White a hand. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Trib Live. Trib Live is made possible by NRG, AT&T, and IBC Bank.